From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
Make me survive.
Seven of us were sleeping when all of a sudden the walls came tumbling in on us. They were screaming. I told them all to call for martyrdom because we were going to die tonight.
Israeli airplanes bombed the Gaza Strip for the third consecutive day, killing 310 and injuring 1,400. Israel prepares for a ground assault and promises, quote, all-out war with Hamas. We'll speak to eyewitnesses in the attacks on Gaza. We'll also be joined by Ali Abu Nima from the Electronic Intifada, Gideon Levy of Haaretz in Tel Aviv, Dr. Mustafa Barghouti in Ramallah. British playwright Harold Pinter has died at the age of 78. We'll play excerpts of his 2005 Nobel Prize acceptance speech.
We have brought torture, cluster bombs, depleted uranium, innumerable acts of random murder, misery, degradation, and death to the Iraqi people, and call it bringing freedom and democracy to the Middle East.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Israeli warplanes and helicopters have attacked the Gaza Strip for a third day in a row. More than 310 Palestinians have been killed since Saturday and 1,400 wounded. Saturday was the deadliest day in Gaza since Israel's occupation of the territory in 1967. Israel's defense minister, Ehud Barak, said today Israel is in a, quote, all-out war against Hamas. Israel's bombed every major town in Gaza, including Gaza City, Khan Yunis, Rafah, and is now threatening to launch a ground invasion as Israeli troops and tanks move to the border. On Sunday, the Israeli cabinet called up 6,500 reserve forces. Overnight, Israeli warplanes bombed Gaza's interior ministry and the Islamic University in Gaza City. A separate Israeli bombing killed four young Palestinian girls from the same family. Palestinian officials say at least 22 children have been killed and more than 235 children have been wounded since Saturday. Israel says the attacks are necessary in order to stop Hamas from firing rockets into southern Israel. Earlier today, one Israeli died after a Palestinian missile hit the town of Ashkelon. 14 Israelis were wounded in the missile strike. The Israeli fatality is the second since the airstrikes began on Saturday. On Sunday, Israeli Foreign Minister Tzipi Livni said Hamas should be condemned by the international community for firing rockets into Israel.
And excuse me, I cannot accept something like we call both sides to halt their violence or to stop their military actions. There is no both sides in this. There is one designated terrorist organization which controls Gaza Strip, which spreads this agenda of hatred that cannot accept our right to live.
Hamas spokesperson Fawzi Barhoum accused the Israeli government of carrying out a holocaust of the Palestinian people.
Today is a holocaust and a massacre day that Livni had internationally and regionally campaigned for, so she can commit to this holocaust and this massacre. This is a public massacre for our Palestinian people in Gaza. All the casualties are policemen, women, children, elderly.
On Saturday, the exiled political leader of Hamas, Khaled Mashal, called for a third intifada, or uprising, against Israeli forces. Hospital officials in Gaza say they're overwhelmed with the number of casualties. Hospitals have been unable to get needed medical supplies into Gaza for more than a year because of the Israeli blockade. Protests against the Israeli attacks have been held throughout the Arab world, Europe, and the United States. The United Nations Security Council Sunday issued a non-binding statement calling for an immediate halt to all violence in the Gaza Strip and for Israel to open the border crossings for aid supplies. This is Nevin Drika, the UN Security Council president.
The members of the Council called for all parties to address the serious humanitarian and economic needs in Gaza and to take necessary measures, including opening of border crossings, to ensure the continuous provision of humanitarian supplies, including supplies of food, fuel, and provision of medical treatment.
Here in the U.S., Republican and Democratic leaders voiced support for Israel's actions. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said, quote, when Israel is attacked, the United States must continue to stand strongly with its friend and democratic ally. A White House spokesperson said, quote, these people are nothing but thugs. Israel is going to defend its people against terrorists like Hamas. The Jerusalem Post reports the Israeli Air Force has been using a new U.S.-made bunker buster missile in its attack on Gaza. Earlier this year, Congress allowed the Bush administration to sell 1,000 of the GBU-39 bunker buster bombs to Israel. We'll have more on the attack on Gaza after headlines. In other news, cleanup efforts continue in Tennessee to combat the largest coal ash spill in U.S. history. The Tennessee Valley Authority now says 5.4 million cubic yards of toxic coal sludge spilled out of a coal plant retention pond last week, burying homes and roads. That's 3 times the size of the TVA's initial estimate. The amount of ash released would fill 450,000 standard dump trucks. A TVA spokesperson said the tests show elevated levels of lead and thallium in water near the breach. The Environmental Protection Agency reported very high levels of arsenic are found in water sample collected from the affected area, and that several heavy metals have also been found in quantities slightly above drinking water standards. The sludge has flowed into the Emory River, a tributary of the Tennessee River, which provides drinking water to millions of people downstream in Tennessee, Alabama, and Kentucky. For more coverage on that, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. Pakistan has redeployed thousands of troops from its western border with Afghanistan to its border with India in the East Pakistani. Officials told the New York Times they'd received intelligence that suggested India could soon launch an attack inside Pakistan. The Pakistani troops have been reportedly sent near the boundary that separates Pakistani and Indian-controlled Kashmir, as well as to areas surrounding Lahore, about 20 miles from the border with India. Tension between the two nuclear-armed rivals has been mounting since last month's deadly attack in Mumbai, which India blamed on Pakistani militants. Meanwhile, in Afghanistan, 14 children died Sunday after a suicide bomber blew himself up near an Afghan primary school. The president of Somalia's UN-backed government resigned today, saying he'd lost control of the country to Islamic insurgents. Abdullahi Yusuf announced his resignation on a nationwide radio broadcast. Yusuf said, quote, most of the country is not in our hands. After seeing all these things, I have finally quit. In Brazil, there's a development in the murder case of Dorothy Stang, the American nun killed in 2005 for speaking out against logging in the Amazon rainforest. Prosecutors in Brazil say they plan to charge a rancher named Regivaldo Galvão after new questions about his involvement were raised in the documentary film They Killed Sister Dorothy. Stang spent 30 years in Brazil trying to prevent ranchers from taking the land of poor Amazon settlers. In domestic news, the Washington Post reports at least 19 states have made cuts to Medicaid benefits, the government health insurance program for the poor. States from Florida to California have lowered payments to hospitals and nursing homes, eliminated coverage for some treatments, and forced some recipients out of the insurance program completely. Many of the states are halting payments for health care services not required by the federal government, such as physical therapy, eyeglasses, hearing aids, and hospice care. Federal health officials set minimum rules about who can enroll and what care must be covered, but states are free to add to the basics. In California, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has asked the state legislature to approve even more Medicaid cuts, including an end to dental care for adults. A new study has found teenagers who pledge to remain virgins until marriage are just as likely to have premarital sex as those who do not promise abstinence and are significantly less likely to use condoms and other forms of birth control when they do. The Washington Post reports the study is the latest in a series that have raised questions about programs that focus on encouraging abstinence until marriage. In political news, a Tennessee Republican seeking the chairmanship of the Republican National Committee is coming under criticism for sending out a CD of holiday music that contained a song called Barack the Magic Negro. Chip Saltzman is the former chair of the Republican Party in Tennessee and former campaign manager for Mike Huckabee. Another candidate for the RNC chair has also been embroiled in a scandal. Kayton Dawson was a longtime member of a whites-only country club in South Carolina. The Nobel Prize-winning British playwright Harold Pinter died Wednesday at the age of 78. The New York Times described him as, quote, the most influential and imitated dramatist of his generation. Pinter's best-known plays include The Birthday Party, The Caretaker, and The Homecoming. We'll play an excerpt of Harold Pinter's 2005 Nobel Prize speech later in the broadcast. And the singer and actress Eartha Kitt has died at the age of 81. She was blacklisted in 1968 after she spoke out against the Vietnam War at a White House luncheon hosted by Lady Bird Johnson. When Johnson asked her about the Vietnam War, Kitt replied, quote, "You send the best of this country off to be shot and maimed. They rebel in the street. They don't want to go to school because they're going to be snatched off from their mothers to be shot in Vietnam." The First Lady reportedly burst into tears. For 4 years afterward, Kitt performed almost exclusively overseas and was investigated by the FBI and CIA.
My greatest challenge was to be able to survive in the business and to be able to survive according to what I was doing, not according to what other people were doing. And therefore, I just stuck to my own guns. And I think that's one of the ways I have survived, is that I didn't follow the herd. I followed my own path.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
And welcome to all of our listeners and viewers around the country and around the world. Amidst worldwide protests, Israel is continuing its bombing campaign against Gaza for the third consecutive day and preparing to launch a possible ground invasion. After months of a crippling blockade, this has been described as one of Israel's bloodiest attacks on Palestinians since 1948. Latest reports indicate that a total of 310 people have been killed and 1,400 injured in the aerial strikes across the Gaza Strip since Saturday morning. The latest targets of the airstrikes include the Hamas Interior Ministry building and the Islamic University. Five people in a single family were killed in a strike Sunday night on Jabalia. This is a surviving family member, Imam Balushi.
Seven of us were sleeping when all of a sudden the walls came tumbling in on us. They were screaming. I told them all to call for martyrdom because we were going to die tonight.
Israel's Defense Minister Ehud Barak announced today that Israel is in a, quote, all-out war with Hamas and its proxies in Gaza. Fears of a ground invasion are growing after Israel declared a military buffer zone around Gaza, closing off the Strip and its 1.5 million residents to journalists and civilians. The Israeli cabinet authorized the calling up of 6,500 reserve soldiers Sunday. Israeli Prime Minister spokesperson Mark Regev said the military campaign would continue until there was, quote, quiet in the south, referring to the rockets launched from Gaza into southern Israel.
Our initial strikes against the Hamas military machine have been successful, but we have no doubt that the Hamas military machine in Gaza remains both formidable and lethal. This campaign will continue, and we have to prepare for different contingencies. Obviously, the final goal remains achieving peace and quiet in the south.
Al Jazeera is now reporting 318 Palestinians have been killed. Two Israelis have been killed by rockets from Gaza since Saturday. Hamas's political leader Khaled Mishal vowed that rocket attacks would continue and suicide missions against Israel would resume in an interview broadcast on Al Jazeera Saturday. The exiled leader in Damascus called on Palestinians to unite and rise up in a third intifada.
This is a historical moment. We worked shoulder to shoulder during the first intifada and the second intifada. Despite the political differences between us, today what is needed is for us to work together in the upcoming intifada and our coming resistance, not only in Gaza, but also in the West Bank.
Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, however, blamed Hamas Sunday for triggering the Israeli assault.
I want to say very clearly that yes, we talked to Hamas and the leaders of Hamas in Gaza, and we spoke to them clearly and honestly, directly and indirectly, and through many parties, Arab and non-Arab. So we were in touch with them. Now it's not important what problems existed between us. We called them and told them, please, we ask you, do not end the truce. Let the truce continue and not stop so that we could have avoided what happened. And I wished it had been avoided.
We're joined by a number of people right now for our discussion in Jacksonville, Florida. We're joined by Ali Abu Nima. He is founder of Electronic Intifada, author of One Country, a bold proposal to end the Israeli-Palestinian impasse. His latest piece, We Have No Words Left, was published in London's Guardian newspaper. We're also joined from Gaza by from Gaza City, by Musa, Dr. Musa El-Haddad. He's a retired physician. His daughter, Leila El-Haddad, is a journalist who writes the popular blog Raising Yusuf. Dr. Musa El-Haddad, we welcome you to Democracy Now! Can you describe where you are and what the situation is like right now?
Well, I am in the middle of Gaza City, in the heart of Gaza City. And the situation is indescribable. If this is not a Holocaust, I don't know what Holocaust is. People, according to the news, they say almost 318 people are dead. The majority of those are civilians. At least 300 of them are civilians, and they say about 1,500 are injured, but a lot of them are seriously injured. The hospitals lack a lot of the necessary stuff, instruments, even gauze and medicines and everything is lacking. Physicians and nursing staff are working around the clock. People cannot find place in the hospitals for treatment injuries. And I am sure there will be a lot more of the dead under the rebels of those buildings that were attacked and demolished. Every now and then we hear a rocket attack or two. So there are warplanes in the sky flying all over the time. As I speak to you now, I can hear them up in the sky. The pilotless jets and the warplanes, F-16s and God knows what. The warships in the sea are also attacking from the sea. And attacking who? Hamas? They are not attacking Hamas. They are attacking the people, the civilians. The civilians, I mean, I'm looking at the street right now, the main street of Gaza, Omar al-Mukhtar, and hardly you can see anyone walking there because every single person is afraid. As you mentioned, last night, a family, five people, a woman and her four children were killed when they were in their house. Three or four mosques were demolished. These are praying areas. These are mosques. So I don't know. Nobody is safe. No place is safe. All the buildings that were attacked, they are not military buildings. Even in the initial day on Saturday, the first 150 people, they were civil servants. They were not rocket attackers. They were civil servants, civilians. I don't know.
And Dr. Musa El-Haddad, I'd like to ask you also about there have been reports that the Israelis were trying to block television signals. What's the situation with the electricity, the ability of the people to at least get some information and communicate with each other?
Well, as I speak to you now, I have no electricity in my house. I have a generator that I can open, let it work for like 2 or 3 hours every now and then to let the internet work and watch TV. We have electricity like 3 or 4 hours a day. We have no cooking gas. I'm talking about the people. Maybe I have a little left in my house, but people don't have electricity about 75% of the time. No cooking gas, no gas for the cars, So fuel is also lacking. And the only source of like food and fuel lately was through Egypt, through those tunnels. And these were attacked last night. At least 40 tunnels were demolished last night. I don't know. This is. Can you tell me if any of this is against Hamas? There's nothing against Hamas. This is a clear-cut genocide and holocaust against civilians, civilians who are helpless. They don't have warplanes. They don't have warships. They don't even the rockets that they talk about are homemade. And I really lost the words because the situation is so bad. And we are in the 21st century. We are not in the 10th or 15th century. Everybody in the world can see and hear, and but who acts? Who's doing anything? Now they say the killer and the killed are the same. They are putting Israel with all its military power level like Hamas and people of Gaza.
Dr. Mohammed Haddad, we're also joined by Fida Kishta, who is a freelance journalist living in Rafah and the Gaza Strip, coordinator for the International Solidarity Movement. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Fida Kishta. Describe what is happening in Rafah.
Well, at this moment, everything is calm. But yesterday was a massive attack to Rafah border. They attacked the border area with more than 11 rockets by the F-16s. And it was the only source for the Gazans to stay survivors by the food and the medicines, anything that they could bring through the tunnels. But now the only way for the Gazans to stay survive is destroyed. And yesterday morning, they attacked a pharmacy in Rafah near my house. It's just 60 meters away from my house. And they attacked the municipality, other normal buildings in Rafah too, which is just include families and civilians. I don't know what is the reason for doing that. As Dr. Musa said, they're attacking civilians. And it's true that the Israelis said that they attack, their attack is really, really massive, and it's really unbelievable that we can see in our eyes what's happening. It's too much, the hospitals, and even Rafah, the biggest hospital, Abu Yusuf al-Najjar, cannot afford to have more than 20 injured, and they move the injured to Gaza City. And most of the people stay at home. Everything is closed. It's like a war. Nobody go out.
Fida Kishta, I'd like to ask you about the role of Egypt. There have been reports that the Egyptians along the border have prevented Palestinians from trying to escape the violence. Could you talk about that, or what you have, the reports you have heard there?
Well, when we hit the attack to the border, me and some friends from the ISM went there to observe in our eyes what's going on. And when we went there, we saw the Palestinians. Palestinians didn't try to scare. The Palestinians tried to show their anger to the Egyptian soldiers why they didn't open just part of this borders, all the crossing, to let the injured go out of Gaza to have treatment in Egypt. This is what the Palestinians tried to do. They didn't try to escape to Egypt. This is a false information. People went to the border with Egypt after the attacks by the F-16 happened, and they tried to show their anger for the Egyptian soldiers to let them just let the injured go to Egypt for treatment. They didn't try to escape.
We're going to go to break, then come back to this conversation. We'll also be joined by Gideon Levy in Tel Aviv. He's with Haaretz and Mustafa Barghouti. He's in Ramallah. Ali Abu Nima is also with us from Florida. He's the founder of Electronic Intifada. Then we'll hear an excerpt of the Nobel Prize acceptance speech of Harold Pinter, who died last week. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. Our guests on the phone, Fida Kishta, freelance journalist in Rafah, Dr. Musa El-Haddad. He's a retired physician speaking to us from Gaza City. Stay with us.
الذي يعرف رد ينحني ويصلي لإله في العيون العسلية بين ردة وعيوني بندقية والذي يعرف رد ينحني ويصلي لإله في العيون العسلية وأنا قبلت ردة عندما كانت صغيرة وأنا أذكر كيف التصقت بي وغطت سعيدي أحلى ضفيرة وأنا قبلت ردة عندما كانت صغيرة وأنا أذكر كيف التصقت بي وغطت سعيدي أحلى ضفيرة وأنا أذكر.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We're speaking with guests in Rafah in Gaza City. Now we go to Tel Aviv with the Haaretz journalist Gideon Levy. He's on the phone with us. His latest piece is called The Neighborhood Bully Strikes Again. Welcome to Democracy Now! As you listen to Dr. Musa El-Haddad, Fida Kishta speaking to us from Rafah, your thoughts in Tel Aviv and the response of the Israeli population to what's happening right now?
First of all, I feel horrible as an Israeli when I hear all those reports, when I watch all those horrible pictures. But unlikely me, I'm afraid that most of the Israelis are quite indifferent. They think that with a legitimate reason, the attacks on the southern parts of Israel, with a legitimate reason, Israel has the right to do everything. Unlikely them, I think that Israel crossed any line of humanity or morality or even legality. And I think what Israel is doing right now there is horrible and has no justification.
Do you think that there may be some decision by the Israeli government to act now, just as the Bush administration is leaving office and Barack Obama will be sworn in on January 20th, that there's a feeling maybe that the U.S. government at this point will not react in any negative way to this kind of action?
Look, you can find all kinds of justifications about the timing. There are also elections, coming elections in Israel soon. But I must remind you that Israel went to a very similar war 2 years ago, a little bit more than 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, when there were no elections and President Bush was still in power and there was no election in the United States and not here. So, I mean, the Second Lebanese War. So I wouldn't count on, I mean, the situation is much more complex than this. There are political calculations, but I don't think that's the main thing. The main thing is that Israel is reacting, overreacting with overpower to a situation which has to have a solution, but not this kind of solution.
And how do you think, Gideon Levy, that this relates to the February 10th elections? Explain who is running and how this plays into this, the bombing of Gaza.
In the, you mean in the domestic Israeli politics?
Yes. With Tzipi Livni, with Ehud Barak, with Benjamin Netanyahu.
There was a poll published yesterday in Israel which showed that within 2 days, Labor had gained 50% more in the polls. namely because Ehud Barak, he is the man who is mostly identified with this operation. He is the Minister of Defense, as you know. So he might gain, and his party might gain out of it, but I wouldn't go so far and think that he did it only for the elections. It was in his back, in the back of his mind. If he gains, so Netanyahu loses, and maybe Kadima remains in the same place or gains also a little bit. But it's too early to judge because we don't know how will it end. You know, all those operations is in a very successful way, but then you don't know how will they end.
We're also joined in Ramallah by Dr. Mustafa Barghouti. Independent Palestinian lawmaker, democracy activist, your response from the West Bank right now, which isn't under siege, to say the least, in the same way as Gaza, Dr. Barghouti.
We are not under siege, but we are under Israeli attack as well. The Israeli army attacked civilian nonviolent demonstrators yesterday in Elin and killed one person and injured three very seriously. Another young boy was killed in another village in Silwal. Three people have been killed already in the West Bank, and the number is rising. But let me say that what Israel is doing in Gaza is not an act of self-defense, as it is claiming. It's not an attack on Hamas. It is an attack on the whole Palestinian population. What we see is a war crime, a bloodbath, unprecedented since 1967. What we have had so far is 318 people killed, including 30 children, and at least 1,400 people injured, including 150 children and 40 women. I was shocked deeply today with the fact that yesterday the Israeli planes destroyed a house in Jabalia camp and killed five girls, five sisters from one family, and injured their mother seriously and critically. This is a bloodbath that should stop immediately. Israel is claiming that it is attacking Hamas, but in fact it is attacking all the Palestinians. It is attacking the whole infrastructure. They have destroyed a university. They've destroyed five mosques. They've attacked a hospital. They are shooting and destroying everywhere. And it is it seems imminent that there will be even a land invasion which could destroy and kill and take away thousands of lives. This is very dangerous, and Israel would not have gone so far if it wasn't for the compliance and the silence of the international community. One very important point here I must clarify, that it was not the Palestinians or Hamas that broke the ceasefire. Israel was the one that broke this ceasefire since 2 months. They started operations and attacks here and there, trying to provoke a reaction, till there was a reaction, and then they claimed that it was the Palestinians who broke this ceasefire. Also, I want to clarify that Gaza Strip is the highest densely populated area in the world, with almost 4,150 people in each square kilometer. When you start bombing the place with bombs that are 1 to 2 tons heavy, then you're determined to kill people and kill civilians and innocent people. I've just heard Tzipi Livni, the foreign minister of Israel, saying that Palestinians should go away from Hamas in Gaza. Where should they go away? In which place they can go to when Israel is putting Gaza for 2 years under total blockade by sea, by air, by land? Israel has been claiming that it has withdrawn from Gaza. Israel never ended its occupation of Gaza. It maintains the occupying the airspace, the sea around Gaza, and the land around Gaza, and it was preventing people from getting medical aid and equipment and fuel and electricity. I was just talking to our people in Gaza and I asked them, what is your situation? They told me they don't have bread. Even bread is unavailable in Gaza. And now Israel is bombarding it in this horrible and unacceptable way. I think the world community must see the reality. This is an unprecedented bloodbath that the Israeli generals are using and politicians are using for their political campaigning in the elections. For one more time, they're using Palestinian blood for their election campaigns. I'm so sorry that even some left parties in Israel are supporting such an aggression. They all claim that this is about missiles, but let me ask a very simple question. How many Israelis were killed during the last 6 months by missiles? Almost none. the only two Israelis that were killed so far were killed after this operation. Will this bring peace? It will not bring peace. Will this bring security? On the contrary, it is bringing back the Intifada to the West Bank. It is creating terrible feeling all over the occupied and Palestinian territories, and this must be stopped. And if it wasn't for the compliance of this terrible American administration, Bush administration, who seemed to insist to have a very dark reputation before he leaves his office, if it wasn't for that support and compliance, Israel would not have dared to go so far in punishing innocent victims and in creating this terrible disaster in Gaza Strip.
Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, what about the issue of the complicity or the silence of other Arab governments and also of the Palestinian Authority now also criticizing Hamas?
Well, I think the Palestinian Authority is finding itself in a very difficult position. One of the main results of this operation is to weaken Abbas so badly that I don't think he will be able to speak on behalf of Palestinians anymore. Even Abbas is now under terrible pressure to stop all negotiations with Israel, to stop all forms of security coordination with Israel, because at the end of the day, he was elected by the Palestinians and not by the right-wing extremists in Israel. And I think he has just called for a general meeting with all parties, including Hamas and Jihad. This is something that never happened during the last year and a half. And I believe that the intention now among Palestinians is to find a way of regaining their unity in front of this grave, inhuman, and unacceptable bloodbath.
I want to bring in Ali Abu Nima, who is in Jacksonville, Florida, though usually based in Chicago, founder of the Electronic Intifada. Your comments on the situation, on Mahmoud Abbas, for example, saying that it was Hamas that brought this on.
I want to say, Amy, first of all, that we have to go back to the Warsaw Ghetto or Guernica to find crimes in the modern era of the scale, of the viciousness, and of the deliberateness of what Israel is committing with the full support of the United States, not just the Bush administration, but apparently as well the incoming Obama administration. We have to recognize the complicity not just of the so-called international community, but also of the Arab regimes, Egypt, President Hosni Mubarak, the foreign minister, Ahmed Abulghait of Egypt, Tzipi Livni, when she issued her threats against Gaza, was in Cairo, in the biggest Arab capital, and Abulghait stood next to her silently. Mahmoud Abbas is not a bystander, the so-called president of the Palestinian Authority. For 2 years since the elections, which Hamas won, he and his coterie have been collaborating with Israel and the United States, first to overthrow the election result and then to besiege Gaza. We have talked before of the Palestinian Contras, funded and armed by the United States, which sought to overthrow Hamas in June 2007 and had the tables turned on them. And now this. The complicity of Mahmoud Abbas is very clear and must be clearly stated. He does not have the authority, moral or otherwise, to call together the Palestinian people for anything. He has gone over to the other side. He has joined the Israeli war against the Palestinian people. And I choose my words very carefully. And let me say this as well, Amy, that Israel is trying to produce and promote the fiction that it is engaged in a war with a so-called enemy entity. What Israel is doing is massacring a captive population. You heard, you said in the headlines how Nancy Pelosi, our so-called progressive, liberal, anti-war Speaker of the House, gave her full support to these crimes. Obama has done the same through spokesmen, and that will not change. The United Nations issued a weak statement aimed at covering the backsides, let me say, of those who issued it, not aimed at changing the situation. What are Palestinians calling for today? Yesterday, the Palestinian National Committee for the Campaign for Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions reissued and reaffirmed its call on all international civil society in the United States, in North America, in Europe, everywhere, to redouble the efforts for boycott, divestment and sanctions modeled on the anti-apartheid movement. This is necessary. This is moral. This is the nonviolent resistance we can all participate in. And it is more urgent than ever. Let's not look back at these crimes like we look at the Warsaw Ghetto and like we look at Guernica and we look at the other atrocities of the 20th century and say we had the chance to act, but we chose silence and complicity. The time to stop this is now. And we also have to be clear that those who are accountable, Ehud Barak, his orders over the past few months to withhold insulin, chemotherapy drugs, dialysis supplies, all forms of medicine from the people of Gaza were just as lethal and just as murderous as the orders to send in the bombers and warplanes to attack mosques, to attack universities. The Islamic University in Gaza is not a military site. It is a university with 18,000 students, 60% of them women. Last night, Israeli warplanes attacked a female dormitory in the Islamic University. This is what Israel is attacking. They attacked the fishing port. No food gets into Gaza. People can barely fish enough to sustain them, and Israel has attacked the fishing boats that sustains them. These are historic crimes, and we cannot be silent about them, and we have to continue this nonsense that there's fault on both sides. We have a captive, occupied population. 80% of the people in the Gaza Strip are refugees. 750,000 of them are children. Where else in the world can these crimes be committed while the world looks on, while our elected politicians in Congress, Democrats and Republicans, sit there applauding? When you see the shameful statement of Howard Berman, the Democrat chairman of the House Foreign Relations Committee, giving his full support to Israel, people have to stand up to this. We cannot sit on our hands anymore and say change is coming. Change is not coming unless we create it.
We have to break, then we're going to come back to this discussion. We are going to put off the playing of the speech of Harold Pinter, the Nobel Prize winner, tomorrow. He died last week. We'll play an extended excerpt of that speech tomorrow. We're talking about what's happening in Gaza right now, joined by guests from Ramallah, from Gaza City, from Rafah, from Tel Aviv, and from the United States. We'll be back in a minute. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We have on the line with us Dr. Mustafa Barghouti in Ramallah. We're joined by Dr. Musa al-Haddad. He is a retired physician in Gaza City. We're joined by Fida Kishta. She is joining us from Rafah. And Ali Abu Nima is on the line with us from Jacksonville, Florida, in studio. Ali Abu Nima, I wanted to ask you about the statements at this point of Barack Obama, or the lack of them. Of course, he's on holiday right now in Hawaii, but David Axelrod was on the networks. Again, they are continuing to say that there is only one president at a time, and that president is President Bush now. Condoleezza Rice is briefing Barack Obama. But he did say that not only would it be counterproductive for the president-elect to weigh in too deeply, but he said that Obama's commitment to the, quote, special relationship between the United States and Israel in a way that suggested general sympathy for the Jewish state's actions. I'm reading from the Huffington Post. Your response.
Isn't it convenient that we only have one president at a time when it suits Barack Obama to stay silent on something that is inflaming the whole world? Apparently, we don't have one president at a time when it comes to the economy or Iraq or Afghanistan or other issues. But on this, Barack Obama is content to remain silent and, in fact, to give, through the statements of David Axelrod, his more or less open support for what Israel is doing, which fits with the policies that he has enunciated consistently of supporting Israel's attacks on Gaza, supporting the blockade of Gaza, supporting the Israeli war on Lebanon in 2006. And this is why Israel feels so comfortable carrying out these sorts of atrocities, which cross every red line of the Fourth Geneva Conventions, of the Nuremberg Principles, of all of the laws of war that were developed in the 20th century. Israel feels totally comfortable crossing them because it knows that it will have full support from any U.S. administration, no matter what political shade it is. And this is why it's crucially important that people don't sit by waiting till January 20th. January 20th, the calendar flipping is not going to change anything. What's going to change things is boycott, divestment, and sanctions, people rising up and demanding an end to impunity, demanding, for example, that Ehud Barak, Ehud Olmert, Tzipi Livni be brought to account before International War Crimes Court for the orders that they have given for these massacres of the civilian population of Gaza. That's what's going to bring change, and that's what people must call and organize for.
I'd like to bring in Dr. Mustafa Barghouti again. The issue of what is the potential for reaction in the West Bank and in the Arab street, as opposed to the complicity of many of the Arab governments at this point. Your sense of, if this continues much further, what will be the reaction?
Well, let me explain one very specific point. Israel is very proud with the complicity of some Arab regimes and some of the people in the Palestinian Authority about what's going on. But I want to remind you that what is happening in Gaza and in the West Bank is nothing but also a slaughter of democracy. We have, as Palestinians, we the civil society in Palestine, we the Palestinian Democratic Forces, jointly with many others, managed to have the best democratic experience ever in the Arab world. Everybody knows that, and President Carter reported it when we had the last elections. And I think this complicity from certain Arab sides are specifically because they don't want this democracy to happen. They don't want this democracy to survive. And if Israel is very proud to be in alliance with dictatorships, then that reveals how democratic Israel itself is. Israel has been claiming that it's the only democracy and so on, but why it is slaughtering Palestinian democracy? They did that in 1976 when we had elections for the first time for our municipalities. And within 1 year, because they didn't like the elected people, they either bombarded them or deported them or arrested them. And now, after 2006 elections, they are putting 45 members of our parliament in jail. One of the leaders, one of the members of parliament, is not Hamas. His name is Ahmad Saadat. He's from the left, from the secular democratic left. He was just sentenced to 30 years in jail just because he is a secretary general of a Palestinian organization. It's amazing how the world is silent about this slaughter of democracy. And if Israel is happy with being in alliance with some dictators, then it is the one that is losing. The main question here that I want to come back to some myths that Israel is spreading. They keep saying that they are attacking Hamas. This is not on Hamas. This is on the whole Palestinian population. They claim that they ended occupation in Gaza. This is not true. They never ended occupation in Gaza. They continued to occupy Gaza. Now they're changing the form of occupation again, and they are threatening to complete invasion again and destroying people's life. Third, they claimed that it was the Palestinians who broke the ceasefire. This is false. This is incorrect. Israel broke the ceasefire. And now the party that is refusing to have ceasefire is Barak, the defense minister of Israel. And he is the one who is refusing to allow ceasefire to happen again. At the same time, I must say that Israel is not only attacking the Gaza Strip. Practically, Israel and the West Bank have created a system that can only be described as an apartheid system, a much worse apartheid than the one that prevailed in South Africa at one point of time. Why do we have all these problems? For one very simple fact, the violence is a symptom of the disease. The disease has been there all the time for 41 years. And it is the Israeli military occupation of the Palestinian territories. And because the Israeli government does not want to stop this occupation, that's why we keep running from one conflict into another. Please.
I wanted to bring Gideon Levy back into the conversation from Tel Aviv, from the Israeli newspaper Haaretz. Gideon, you write, blood will now flow like water. Besieged and impoverished Gaza, the city of refugees will pay the main price, but blood will also be unnecessarily spilled on our side. In its foolishness, Hamas brought this on itself and on its people, but this does not excuse Israel's overreaction. What about, can you elaborate on this?
Yes, I think that Israel had this legitimacy to protect its citizens in the southern part of Israel, and it had the legitimacy to do something, as the Israelis all expect the government to do. But this doing something does not mean this brutal and violent operation. The diplomatic efforts were just in the beginning, and I believe we could have get to a new truce without this bloodshed. And even about the military reaction, you know, there are all kinds of stages. Immediately to send dozens of jets to bomb a total helpless civilian society with hundreds of bombs. Just today, they were burying five sisters. I mean, this is unheard of. This cannot go on like this, and this has nothing to do with self-defense or with retaliation even. It went out of proportion exactly like 2.5 years ago in Lebanon.
Dr. Musa Haddad, in Gaza City, the responsibility of Hamas here and the response of the people of Gaza right now, a quote of Tzipi Livni, who just recently said, unfortunately, in this kind of attack, there are some civilian casualties, but Israel took all the necessary actions to warn the civilians before the attacks to leave the places they know that Hamas stays.
Well, it's not some civilians. All those who are dead now, most of them are civilians. And a question that keeps coming up, people are saying Israel has the right to protect itself from the of Hamas rockets. What about the West Bank? Does Hamas West does West Bank has rockets that they throw on Israel? Of course, none. And look at what's happening in the West Bank, in Hebron, Nablus, and Ramallah, and everywhere. people are being killed almost every day. And look, I just cannot explain to you the situation right now. Hamas, as an organization, was, as Dr. Bahouti just mentioned, this government was democratically elected in front of the eyes of the whole world, and this is the only democratic election that happened in the Middle East. Really democratic. And people, why just the world didn't give this government the chance to prove itself? It was not going to throw rockets or just when they had this truce and the ceasefire, who broke it? It was Israel. We had a siege for 1.5 months. Nothing allowed in. No medicines, no food, no nothing. And still, Hamas and other organizations did not throw any rockets. Israel kept on coming, and they killed 23 people in 3 weeks. Of course, this provoked Hamas, and they just did not renew this issue of ceasefire because it was useless.
I'd like to ask also Fida Kishta to back into the conversation. This continuing occupation and encirclement and the problems that you face in Gaza, how do you persevere, you and the other residents there day to day, manage to get through?
Well, for Palestinians in general, they face a lot from the Israeli occupation. And if you don't find a house in the whole Gaza Strip, doesn't damage by losing a son or a father or a daughter or a mother. We used to face lots of problems with the Israelis, and me, myself, I'm one of the people and the person who lost their house in 2004. We managed to continue our life. We managed to build a new house, and now we survive. But the problem of the other people who can't build new houses or even afford the food for their families. Palestinians try to be strong, but under these attacks that the Israelis now, actually the war that Israel started with Palestinians in Gaza, it's really unbelievable and not acceptable. It's genocide, and all the world should stop and say to Israel, stop it, that's enough. The Gazans is... people choose this government, and you should accept it. And for us as Gazans, we try to continue our life no matter what's happened. We keep the hope, and we keep the struggle for the future and for our families. We don't think, for example, if the Israelis destroy a house or kill a son or a daughter, that means our life is ended. We try to survive and continue our life. We try to do our best with it, but Israel is trying every single day, every single minute to destroy the Palestinian hope. And I don't know what these normal Palestinians did for them, what these civilians did for them. So we try to manage and continue our life. This is what we try to do. No matter we try to continue our life.
I want to go back to Ali Abu Nima. The next step now, Israel is preparing for a ground invasion, calling up 6,500 troops. Do you hold Hamas responsible for any of this? What do you think Hamas should be doing now?
What could, I mean, this thing about Hamas, if they hadn't fired rockets, and this was the Israeli propaganda that Mahmoud Abbas was repeating in Cairo. And as Dr. Al-Haddad said, has one single rocket ever been fired from the West Bank? No. And as Dr. Barghouti was saying, the West Bank is under constant attack. People are being killed. Amy, you had on your show the settler pogroms that were happening in front of the eyes of the world in the West Bank, the settlement construction that goes on. There has not been a single rocket fired from the West Bank. Abbas has capitulated to the Israelis. His so-called security forces trained by the United States and armed by the United States, have been fighting the resistance in the West Bank. Did that spare one single Palestinian in the West Bank from Israeli violence or colonization? No, it did not. This notion that Israel has a right to defend itself, against who? Against 1.5 million people who are refugees, who are starving, who are caged in the world's largest prison or concentration camp. Don't Palestinians also have a right to defend themselves? What should Palestinians do? I turn the question on those who keep pointing the finger at the Palestinians.
Ali Abunima, we're going to have to leave it there.
Acceptable. And so,
I thank you very much for being with us, Ali Abunima in Florida, Dr. Musa al-Haddad and Fida Kishta, both in Gaza, Dr. Mustafa Barghouti in Ramallah. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.